Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. Today is Thursday, the 17th, coming to you live from New York City. This episode is brought to you by my fantastic motorcycle sponsor, El Cajon Harley. Get your motorcycle at El Cajon Harley. I don't care where you live. You can live in London, fly over, and then ship it back. I don't care. Get a motorcycle there. El Cajon Harley. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. They got all kinds of great things going on right now. They got the new Milwaukee 8 bikes in there. Get yourself a brand new bagger. Trade in your old clunker. They'll take it. Also, they do financing, all kinds of great stuff. Holidays are coming up. Get some gifts for your family members, motor clothes or helmets or gloves, or buy your loved one a motorcycle. The six ladies that listen to this podcast, your man wants a motorcycle. I guarantee it. Get him one. El Cajon Harley. How are you guys? I'm here in New York City, and this is a special episode today. Introduce yourself, my man.
Hello, I'm Michael Devon.
No, that was fucking...
Hello. I can't
go there right away.
Everybody loves,
can't go there out of the box.
Everybody
dude.
Loves when you do.
Love and light, Michael.
Yeah. How the hell are you? We're down here in the East Village,
we
man.
We are, dude.
Yeah, I just love
the mecca of music and comedy in one shot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're right next to David Lee Roth's great grandfather, I guess, owned Cafe Wall,
Cafe
or his grandfather,
Wa.
One of the two.
He did.
And then, of course, my favorite spot here in New York, the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah, man.
You know, land of Louis C.K. If you watched Louis, every episode opened there. And it's just a great area here. It reminds me a lot of kind of San Francisco, the North Beach area.
Yeah.
It's got some New Orleans, just this area here, some Bourbon Street vibe at night. A lot of drunk people walking around, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's got some... just old school, like, just old school New York, man.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, I know there are all kinds of neighborhoods that are still, you know, in existence like this. I mean, I don't know the city all that well, but I do know that it's a cool little nook that I don't see, I don't walk through very often in the city, where it's still old establishments and people that are still out enjoying entertainment that's not on a screen, you know what I mean? Like, they're still out listening to comedy, listening to music. You've got the Blue Note just down the street.
Yep.
You've got, was it Sounds? Is that what it's called over there?
Yeah.
The other music joint over there.
And then the Comedy Cellar has three joints now because they took over the, what's the one that goes underground around the corner here? I forget the name of it.
Yeah,
it's
famous. Yes.
They do jazz and their shit. But so you got the Fat Cat, Pussycat or whatever, and then downstairs, Cellar is booking both those as comedy now.
Yeah, and some nights, man, that street right there is just on both sides. Is packed, depending on who's at the Blue Note and who's over there.
It's rad, man. I love it.
Dude, I mean, I came here, you know, and I couldn't believe it. I walked out, you know, the first night I was, you know, I was like, this is it, man.
Yeah.
It was lit up. You
yeah.
know? And I think I got here on a Friday or a Saturday night, and I'm like, this is going to be a very cool summer, you know?
Yeah. And, when did you get here? After the Whitesnake tour?
Yeah. And I would come here on break because, you know, Dre is shooting Shades of Blue here.
Right.
And so when we'd have little breaks, I would fly here and just, you know, see her and her family.
That's the best of both worlds. That's my dream right now, is to live L.A. and New York, you know?
Yeah, man. It you know, I grew up on the East Coast, so I grew up in Massachusetts, and I had a hard time at first coming back here on the East Coast around the months that were not summer.
Because
You know, man.
I haven't been in that yet.
Yeah, dude,
I
mean, it's like...
So everything's glamorous to me. Even right now, I'm sweating.
Yeah, you know?
It's November 17th. It's 60 out.
It's beautiful.
And once you start trucking around, you know, look,
I'm
sweating.
It's a gorgeous day today.
It is.
It
really
is.
Incredible.
Yeah. And you're still getting that those great rainy days, you know, that it's not too unbearable. It's like, oh, that was cool to catch a nice rainstorm. But you wait till the snow kicks in, bro. And you start, and then you can't go out, you know, and you're like, God damn, you know.
Yeah,
and the heat's cranking, and it's like old school, you know, steam heat, and you're just... You're
fucking
dying.
Up your shoes out there.
Yeah,
I don't like my shoes fucked up,
man.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Like dirty snow, that dirty snow slush on your shoe. Yeah. I'm that kind of weirdo. I like clean shoes. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is. I think because you touch them every night when you take them off.
That might be it.
Yeah.
I tell you though, it's beautiful. Snow's beautiful as it's coming down, but once the plows and the salt and the sanders come by, and it all turns to mud and it sits there till April, man. I mean, that's why I moved to as far away as I could to the West Coast. I'm like, I'm sick of the mood swings.
Yeah.
But it's been, all that said, it's been really awesome being here and watching the seasons change because I haven't seen that in a long time. You know, in LA, man, you wake up and it's 75 and sunny pretty much every day.
No, it's 90 now.
Yeah.
There is no more 75. I'm begging for 75.
Right.
It was 90 yesterday when I left. November 16th.
Dude, that's insane.
90.
Insane.
It's never not 90 anymore. It's so weird. I remember
it's like the Truman Show.
When I first moved to LA, you would get a couple cooker months. It would be like August and September. You go, wow, this is hot. And then it would just go into normal, like 78 degrees.
Yeah.
Now you get about 8 months of 90. And then it gets down to like the 80s, then back to 90 and above.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
We used to blame it on things. We'd have good excuses for it back in the day, too. Like, oh, it's the Santa Anas.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
earthquake weather.
Yeah, it's earthquake weather.
Earthquake weather's my favorite because I was in the biggest earthquake, 89, in San Francisco.
Oh.
And I don't remember any strangeness to the weather.
Right.
I was just sitting there watching the World Series and that fucking land shook, man.
Dude.
Earthquake weather's jive.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's like 1920s vernacular.
I was like, pretty still. Oh, quake.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's great to be here in New York. And I always love seeing LA friends in New York. It seems special to me. Like, we're on the other side.
We are, bro. And, dude, I'm going to tell all your listeners and fans, you're shredded, bro. You look ripped. You got pipes. Look at you, man. You've been working out. You've been working hard.
Yeah.
That's what I like about you. You never stop. You never give up. You keep pushing the boulder up
the
hill,
dude. Shave the mustache off.
You shave the mustache.
Yeah.
You look fucking 15 years younger now.
Yeah. Well, you know, you grow a mustache and hope you get the weird neighbor role. And after 3 years, when you don't, you go, this is out. I enjoyed the mustache for a while, but it's after 3 years, I was just telling you, trimming that thing all the time and just like it gets old. You know what I mean?
I know, dude. Look, I got this beard. I feel like Father Time with this thing, dude.
I would have a beard, but it's completely gray and I don't want to sit there and dye it all the time.
Yeah.
It's totally gray.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, really?
What?
Well, that can look, you know, that can be an element of sophistication.
Yeah, I don't want to look 90.
No,
I'm only
you don't.
50.
Yeah, you
know, as soon as I grow
it.
A beard, all of a sudden I'm 60.
Well, yeah, you add at least 10 years.
Yeah.
Then, you know.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. I see photos of myself, I'm like, on the, you know, from 2010 or 11. I'm like, wow, who's that kid?
Yeah. But a beard looks dope when you're like a bass player in a band. Like, my favorite era of like Beatles or Zeppelin was when they had beards. It's so weird when they had... I never liked Robert Plant's fucking...
Oh, his little nib, his little pencil nib there.
Well, he had that, like, what are they, like, Cheerio, like some kind of weird, you know, Pied Piper look, you know?
He did.
But Jimmy looked dope with that weird Zoso sweater.
Yeah.
And it was weird. They only had that look for a minute.
Yeah, coming out of the gate, they did. 69, 70.
Yeah, 71.
And then Jonesy had a good beard going on, and he had really long hair for a while.
Yeah.
He had the full-on, you know, the Dutch boy haircut.
I love beards. I had a fucking big one in that movie Hell Ride.
Yeah.
And I grew it just so it would, I would look extra crazy. And
yeah, yeah.
I look at it and even my mustache. I look at my mustache from 3 years ago and it's all brown. And then like about 2 weeks ago, I saw a photo of it and half of it was gray.
Yeah.
It looked like I had a half stash in the photo. I was like, this is out of here.
Drinking milk, doing blow and not wiping
just,
it off.
Yeah, it's all blow. Just blow side. Yeah, man. You're going to keep the beard though, right? You'll keep it, right?
I don't know. You know, man. I mean, you know, I don't know. Like, yeah, I just go with how I feel, you know?
Yeah, it's me too. That's how I am. I just woke up one day. I was like, I don't like to be known for something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's the mustache guy.
Right.
Or he's the, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like, change it up and...
Yeah.
And have fun, you know? Yeah.
I guess it just makes, because I'm lazy, I guess it just makes my life easier to not shave.
Yeah. Yeah, I go electric shaver, so I just blast it off real quick.
Yeah. You know?
See, if this would be a good ad for one of those dumb razor things right now. Speaking of that, we're about to shave Devin's beard off with blah, blah, blah. That's a podcast, guys. Right. Now, I'm pretty excited because you texted me last week, and the whole reason I wanted to do this episode was we both saw Temple of the Dog. You saw it at Madison Square Garden.
I did, yeah.
And I saw it at the LA Forum, two of the most iconic venues in the world, and now owned by the same people.
Really?
Yeah, which is pretty wild.
Zeppelin played both venues.
Yeah, I saw a photo. When you go to the Forum, they have all the photos around the whole building now of people that played there and how many times. I think it said Zeppelin 17 times.
Wow.
And they had an incredible photo of them from 75, you know.
Wow. A good year for them.
No, man, you think that's like Jimmy Page breaks his finger, though, so half the tour is good.
Wasn't that 77?
75.
He broke his finger in 75?
I like the 77. It's the bloated, long, four-hour, you know, just like super indulgent. Yeah. 75, though, broke finger. Some people, like the bootlegs are called, like, Jimmy plays sloppy or sloppy in Texas. Everything was sloppy,
really?
You know what I mean? But I liked it. It was dirty.
I liked it, too, and they did a great acoustic set within their the show, you know, and Robert still had some of the highs that I, you know, by 77, I just think he was, you know, his voice, it was tired, man. They never stopped.
You know? Well, those guys, man, like, you know, shit monitors back then, vocal monitors, and then Jimmy and all those guys had to be on 10.
Well, David said that was the loudest guitar player he's ever played with, David Coverdale. Yeah. So Jimmy's sound, just coming out of those Marshalls, he said, my head blasted right off my shoulder.
I could imagine. There's no way Jimmy, first of all, has any hearing. And second of all, you know what I mean? And there's
it's
no
gone.
Way he's going to turn his amp down to like 8. If it goes to 10, he's going to 10.
That's where the tone starts. That's where the tone begins at 10.
Yeah, yeah. And the way he worked his guitar, if you watch him, he'll slide the volume down for cleaner. Just put the volume on like 8 and on his guitar and then roll it up when he needs the dirty. And
that's the old school way.
It's the old school. No volume pedal.
People don't do
cheating.
That anymore. No. And man, he would get some sweet honey tones when he would roll back a little bit.
Oh, it was crazy. Out of a Les Paul, you'd
God.
Be like, you listen to it and you go, oh, that's got to be like a Strat there.
Yeah.
Or that's got to be a Tele. But no, man, he's getting everything out of that Les Paul, man. That thing is, Les Pauls are the Chevys to me. They do it all.
They do it all.
Yeah, they
absolutely.
Do it all.
So his was modded, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's exact to Peter Green.
That's right.
You know, he's got the reverse
the phasing.
Phasing,
knob.
Yeah. So he gets some weird tone on there.
Yeah.
And they sold him like that, too. Mm-hmm. And then it has the kind of push pull.
The push
you know?
Pull.
And
on
then
there.
Under the pick guard, there's buttons.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that shit's fucking wild.
More of his sorcery.
I never got into that. I just like a straight guitar.
Yeah, I mean, buzzing noisy, loud.
Yeah, I just don't like any hoopty. Like one pedal, like a crybaby and a phaser.
Phase 90.
And I love that shit. Just wow.
Yeah, man.
You know that sound?
Yeah.
But yeah, so when Temple of the Dog announced the tour, first of all, I'm beyond floored. You know, immediately I'm like, I'm tweeting, I must see this. And I wanted to see it multiple nights, but due to stand-up, I was going to see San Fran and L.A., but And then I wanted to see Seattle on Monday.
Yeah.
And then shows started coming up, and that's what I do for a living. And I've realized I got to, if other than Temple of the Dog, if it was anybody else, I would have just kept working. I've been going to too many shows. I'm like, I'm out on this. I got to get stay focused and in the grind, because I've seen all these bands a million times.
Yeah.
People are like, hey, you going to go see such and such? I saw them like in 81, 89. 94, 90, you know what I mean? After a while, you're like, I don't need to see it unless it's a new band I need to see.
Sure.
But this, I needed to see. And it went on sale, and I didn't care. I was like, okay, they'll do the 10 songs on the record, and then maybe two covers or a Soundgarden, a Pearl Jam song, and I'd be out of there, and it'd be amazing. Had no expectations. As long if they just played the record, holy shit, because I always thought the record was a masterpiece.
Me too.
Probably spun it a million times when I lived in San Fran. And then 4 million times Mother Love Bone, Apple record.
Yeah.
So the first night in Philly, they put the set list out, and I just fall out of my chair.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
It's 25 songs. First of all, these guys are rich.
Yeah.
They could just come in and do 15 songs, and no one's going to complain and punch in.
Yeah.
But this is how I realized how much they really wanted to blow minds. And say, hey, man, this is what we do, and this is where we come from. Because when you look at the covers, and I always said Soundgarden was our Black Sabbath. Of course, they do War Pigs.
Yes.
I always knew Cornell Worship Zeppelin. They do
Achilles.
Achilles Last Stand, which was so fucking mind-boggling.
Yeah.
They do I'm a Mover.
Yes.
By Free, which you know Cornell's way into Free.
Paul Rogers, you know, man. Come on. From that cloth.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I like when a lot of people say, man, how good a singer is he? And it's like, well, he studied the greats. Yes, just look at the fucking set list.
Yes, he did. I swear there's some David Coverdale, old school David Coverdale in that voice of his as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's some definitely early on, you know. Yeah. Give me all your love.
Yeah.
You know, that old,
all the pre-dyed blonde hair.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. That real.
Low, kind of lower register bluesy, which David, you know, also came from the Paul Rogers school. So it's all sort of part of the same family tree. But it was interesting to, like, they pulled out I'm a Mover.
I mean, a mover.
I couldn't believe it.
I know.
Are you serious?
I couldn't believe when I first looked at the set list, which I got it right here on my phone. I stared at it for like five.
I got New York's on my phone.
Oh, yeah. Pull that up. I don't even know where my phone went.
Probably the same,
here it is.
But.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look at this.
That's from Madison Square Garden.
When you look at this, first of all, okay, they open with Say Hello to Heaven, which is the great tune, man.
Yeah.
That, which right away just sets the pace up of like, this is for Andrew Wood, you know.
Well, they open the show with his little piano bit, right?
Yeah. Temple of the Dog.
Yeah.
Let me show you something like the joy inside my heart.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah,
seems great. I've been living with the temple of the dog. Yeah. Man, that shit is great. Wooden Jesus. Wooden Jesus to me is really when I really discover the genius of Matt Cameron back in the day. Because that beat, I remember no one could play that beat in the clubs. You know what I mean? It was just like, what is that beat? And I read Wooden Jesus was just this normal tune. And then Matt Cameron put that beat to it and it completely became this whole other thing.
Yeah, it turned it on its side pretty much. Yeah. He's the master of that, though.
Oh, really, man.
And he plays with time like a cat with a mouse.
He was killing on Achilles last day, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
As a Led Zeppelin aficionado, they didn't, if I can critique anything, the arrangement was not exact, but it doesn't matter.
The arrangement was different.
It wasn't exact. You know, there are parts of that song that are laid on record that, you know, some things repeat five times as opposed to four. You know what I mean?
Like, I think they just keep it, you know, like AC/DC. Because AC/DC, as simple as you think it is, when you go to jam it, you're like, why did they do seven in this part?
Yeah.
You know, it's eight. It's eight or four. You know, like, it's all this weird shit.
Yeah.
But They did Call Me a Dog, yeah. Your Savior.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have the Temple of the Dog record, get it right away. Yeah. It just came out remastered.
It still sounds great, man.
Oh, yeah.
It was produced beautifully, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I think one of the highlights of the show definitely was Seasons, which was the solo Cornell song on the single soundtrack. And it was interesting to hear how he came up with the title. I'm sure I knew this back in the day, but my brain just pushes stuff out I don't need anymore, you know? But I guess for the movie, Jeff, the bass player, was doing art props for singles, and he made a cassette demo tape for the so-called band that was on the movie, Matt Dillon's band, and he did fake songs. Then Cornell loved the names on the songs and wrote songs from those titles.
To the titles, yeah.
Yeah.
Seasons being one of them.
Seasons is incredible.
And it really is an incredible tune. Laid on a four-track, because he also was saying that they were writing all their songs on four-track in their bedroom and handing them in to Cameron. Like, what about this? What about that? And but it was wonderful to hear the song actualized in a live environment. I only know that song as something on record. I've heard Chris, or I've watched him do it on YouTube,
right,
as a solo artist with his acoustic. I think I've seen that. But to hear a band pull it off and electrify that riff and that song was just amazing, man.
Yeah.
You know, it really was. It was like listening to, it was like listening to something brand new. But,
yep,
it's familiar, but yet it's got a new angle, and I just thought that tune was a highlight of that show for me. I was like, I couldn't believe they went there, man.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah.
What was, and we'll get more into the set list here in a minute, but what I've said over and over and over is I can't believe how underrated Mike McCready and Stone Gossard are. Mm-hmm. First of all, Stone, if you look at the bands he's been in, and then the tunes he's wrote and the riffs. And then Mike McCready is just, when they played Hendrix, I saw him. Did they do the Hendrix tune?
They did.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, you never hear them first of all, you never hear about Stone, incredible songwriter. You never hear that. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And you never hear Mike McCready in the top 20 guitar players. But this guy... Mm-hmm. is giving it his all. I think he's like my age, 50 or something. Mm-hmm. And he was going for it, man.
Yeah, he was.
And I know he's had some problems in the past. I think he had Crohn's disease or something. He had some kind of problem. And this guy was just murdering the guitar, man.
And the way those two play together, man. I mean, I was telling my buddy who I went with, and it's like, crochet. I mean, these two guys are just needles working, harmoniously, creating a sound that, until one decides to step out and solo, you can't tell who's doing what.
Yeah.
They've been playing together for so long. It was perfect, man.
It really was.
Yeah. Sonically, too, they sounded like one guitar, but it was a wall of sound.
It was a wall of sound. Yeah. I don't know how the sound was in the garden, but the sound at LA Forum was spectacular. Yeah. It sounded like a CD turned up. Yeah. It was perfect.
Yeah.
it's amazing because when Love Bone came out, it hit me like so hard. I loved the band so much, and barely anybody knew it, But my circle of friends, my crew, there's like 20 of us, we worshiped this record. We played it every party. It was in a couple jukeboxes in San Fran. It played it nonstop in bars. Yeah. It had all the moods. It had rock. It had a little bit of funk. It had ballads,
Yeah, and a little bit of psychedelia in there.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Psychedelia.
Yeah.
And just incredible songs, they're so original sounding.
Absolutely.
They don't come on and you don't go like... grunge or whatever. It's pre-grunge or whatever,
Yeah.
But it's really just next level. And to think about how iconic Chris Cornell is and how big Andrew Wood must have been to him to go out, write a record, and then 25 years later, tour the record, I mean, you know, that guy made a fucking mark on that crew right there.
Sure he did. He was, they were roommates, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right?
They were roommates,
yeah.
And from what I recall, it was kind of a song a day challenge.
Yeah, that's what they
with,
said,
living
yeah.
with him. You
yeah, because he said when he brought in, what song was it? He said he was so jealous, you know?
Yeah.
Andrew Wood came in and he was like, ah, fuck, you got me, man. Which one was it? It was Man of Golden Words.
Oh, yeah.
You know? He was
yeah.
like, oh, you got me. It's insane, man, how yeah. great of a songwriter that guy was. I mean, Stardog Champion, when they do that one.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think they were going to do any Left Bone.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
It's funny. I thought they were gonna like pass on that, but.
And I was so happy.
Oh,
they did.
Man, when they get into the refrain, the final refrain, and the crowd takes over.
Oh, man.
Yeah, hairs what? On end, man. It was yeah. it was very cool.
It was so incredible.
Yeah.
I think another, I could have done without Jumping the Fire. Don't know the tune at all. I thought it was Jumping the Fire by Montrose.
No, that's Harry Nilsson.
Yeah, I don't know that.
That is a song. Oh, it's a great song from the 60s,
I
believe, or the early.
What that had to do with them.
Well, I see, I don't know, because I had this theory, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it seemed to me that every cover song they played,
yeah,
it was somebody deceased, and I know Harry Nilsson, you know.
Right, right. Here,
but I don't know what that has to do. Maybe it was Andrew Wood's, you know, one of his favorites, I don't know, but it had that bass line at the top of the tune. The song was popularized in The Goodfellas.
Oh, no shit.
When he's all gacked out.
Yeah.
And the chopper.
Oh, the chopper's above him, yeah.
You
yeah,
hear that bass like, line come in. Boop, 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 boop. That's, yeah, and that's Nilsson. It's a great tune. I love that tune.
Yeah.
But I'm a big Nilsson fan. But.
To me, I was just kind of like, it just took me out of it because of the flow that was going on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not complaining. That's yeah. stupid. But all of a sudden, I was just kind of like,
what
oh,
is
this?
This
kind of took the wind out of this fucking for the crowd and stuff.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because, you know, I knew they were doing it for what they loved.
It really was a curveball, though.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. Because you're coming out of, let's see, they came out of, let me look real quick here. Oh, Seasons.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, yeah, Seasons. Wow, now we're getting deep. And then went into this cover. But it's all good. I'm not complaining. It was incredible. Then they did Four Walled World. They did I'm a Mover.
Yeah.
Push It Forward, Back, amazing. Then they did Hunger Strike, which is so fucking funny because some guy tweeted at me like, oh man, I was so mad. When the guy said, kind of lame they're out there touring without Eddie Vedder. And I was like, I was steaming.
Thumbs down.
First of all, the guy sang six lines on one song in 10.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, that's what I hate about people. They think that that was the Eddie Vedder thing or something. If you're just some surface person from MTV back in the day.
Yeah.
It made me kind of like mad because I was like, are you kidding me, dude? This guy had nothing to do with it.
No, because that was all post facto. That he laid that vocal down before he was quote unquote Eddie Vedder.
That's right. He was
up there. Some kid from San Diego trying out, auditioning for.
Doing some demos.
For Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah,
wasn't that the name of their band? Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah, that was the name.
Yeah.
That is so.
So he was just a kid, really, and you know, he sang lines, and he apparently sang the lines without any direction from Cornell, and Cornell took that as like, wow, this guy's kind of tapped into what we're doing here, without knowing anything about their history, their time together. I mean, he's coming from the South; they're all hanging out up north. Nobody's famous. I mean. Maybe Soundgarden were kind of the Seattle darlings at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
But they hadn't broke yet with Bad Motorfinger.
Yeah, no, not at all. Loud Love was the record.
Yes, they were touring a lot.
Yeah, totally.
And Pearl Jam wasn't even Pearl Jam. This guy, you know, he came in and they said, hey, we think we got a new singer. What do you say?
Yeah, they were rehearsing at night, and I guess he was in the back going, I'm going hungry.
Oh, really?
Know? Yeah, and he was like, hey, try that out, man, right here, you know? And then he dug it, and then he said, you sing a verse of the same verses. But, you know, I love Eddie Vedder.
I do too.
I absolutely love Eddie Vedder. And I think that he got a lot of flack for years for no reason. But I don't think there's no reason to bring him out for one verse for a full nine show tour or whatever. Yeah. It would just be dumb because then you would have to start to try to integrate him in.
Or Pearl Jam songs. So now you're doing Pearl Jam songs, so now you might as well be doing Soundgarden songs.
Taking away
so
from
now,
what it is, yeah.
Yeah, where are we going? Are you gonna...
Now, I think in the summer, they do a tour, and this is what I was saying yesterday. Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, tour this summer, and they close with the Temple of the Dog stuff. You know what I mean?
That'd be badass.
That would be great. Yeah. Their own festival.
Yeah.
You know?
That'd be great. I blame a lot of the disdain for Eddie Vedder on the
Kurt
Nirvana.
Cobain.
Yeah, on Cobain. Yeah, totally. In the Nirvana feud, you know, calling them the bad company of, you know, the 90s or
whatever. That was really dumb, too.
It really was.
You know, if you're already big, why just shit on other people?
Yeah, I don't get it either.
I never understand that theory. Yeah. That just shows some serious insecurity.
Yeah, youth. You know,
which I get, you know, you're like, we're not part of that. We're punk rock, whatever. I never thought of, you know, Pearl Jam as some commercial thing. They blew up, but the record didn't blow up at first. You know, none of that stuff did.
No.
It wasn't like they're sitting around trying to write hits.
Not at all.
There's no quote unquote hits on that record.
No.
What you would think is a hit.
No, not at all. Not by design or composition or arrangement. It's a band jamming. I think people just connected to Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, and Jeremy was so fucking in your face everywhere. I could see people going like, oh, enough.
Yeah.
But by the time Versus comes out, it's one of the best records of the 90s, man. Yeah. I think Versus is...
That's actually my favorite of...
100%.
Yeah, I liked it more than I liked 10. And I don't mean...
I'm not a 10 guy compared
production
to Versus.
Wise,
production-wise,
I thought Versus was a great production.
Oh, yeah. They did it up there at the site in Marin County where Keith Richards did Talk Is Cheap.
Great album.
Right?
Yeah.
And
Locked Away.
What
a great tune.
What a fucking band, you know?
Yeah.
You know, one interesting thing I wanted to say about this, too, is early on, I saw Soundgarden many, many times before they were famous.
Yeah.
And Cornell didn't play guitar in the beginning when I saw him, you know, like one song maybe or two. But he was a front man.
He was shirtless and in cutoff.
With the duct tape
fatigues.
Shorts.
Yeah.
And combat boots.
Yeah, combat boots.
And he just up there like, you know, hands up. You know, like
at the lip of the stage.
Rock god.
Yeah.
And I really love seeing Cornell as a front man.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Because I miss that. When I saw it early on, I was like, when he got locked into the guitar later on, I was kind of like, bummer, man.
Short hair in the guitar, man.
He was a front man for a while there that was not seen, you know, not seen for after the band gets up and going ever again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I wonder if that doesn't help with his longevity, though, in hindsight. You
of
know,
course, but, yeah. Because I think when you're known just as a front man, people don't think you're a songwriter.
Well, though, and then they expect that. It's like if David Lee Roth all of a sudden comes out with ukulele and
Or guitar.
And is like, you know, I'm the older, wiser David Lee Roth. People are going to go, boo, hiss. Yeah. I want to see you in, you know, sparkle pants and shirtless with your six pack. And doing, you know, splits off the drum riser, even though the guy's in his 60s.
Yeah.
People don't, you know, it's they don't have that. They don't have the ability to see that, you know, their heroes get old. Or they boo, you know, they poo-poo it when they actually do get old.
Yeah, you know? They go, oh man, this guy sucks now.
Yeah.
It's all locked down with an acoustic.
It's just bullshit.
It really
is. You know, and Chris, so he probably saved himself by doing that.
That's so true. I never thought about that. Because when you really look at frontmen, you never think of them as songwriters.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, not really.
Like even Plant, you know, I always think of Jimmy Page as the riff guy, the producer, the arranger. And John Paul Jones as, you know, the strings and everything. But, you know, of course, Robert Plant, the crazy lyrics and stuff. But you never think of him as just sitting down writing a full tune.
No, you don't. And I mean, the thing I think that saved Robert was the left turn he took after, you know, the death of John Bonham. I mean, he went full on pop embraced the 80s
yeah.
with his look, his image, his videos, and his songs, and the production of those songs.
I mean, love those records.
Me too, man.
I saw those
Robbie Blunt on guitar.
Oh, man.
He's great, man.
What's the first one they had that hit?
Was it Pictures at 11? Or
yeah,
what?
That was the record, but there was a great song.
Oh,
that...
there was a Lay Down Your Arms?
Yeah, Lay Down Your Arms. That was great.
Baby.
And then what was that weird side band he did too?
Well, he did the Honey Drippers.
Honey Drippers, that was it. Yeah.
But that was, I believe the Honey Drippers, if I'm not mistaken, was all of those cats, Jimmy Page,
yep.
Jeff Beck, Ronnie
yeah.
Wood. It was like yeah. this big super
yeah.
group.
It was cool.
And they made a record, and the one song that yeah. takes off is that sappy, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Come with me, love, love. And that yeah. was really, he wrote that. He did that song for his mom. That was that was his mom's favorite song.
And that's his Elvis influence.
Big time.
He worshipped Elvis in early Zeppelin. They
Big
covered
time.
Elvis.
Yes,
you
they
know,
did.
Blue suede shoes
yeah,
and
did.
Stuff.
Oh,
if
yeah.
you listen to that 69 oh, yeah. stuff, he loved
he
Elvis.
Loved Elvis.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, but he, you know, he managed to somehow, you know, get out of the, you know, the cock rock god, you know, golden god persona and get into, you know, leading, you know, being a songwriter, if not a songwriter, but at least somebody who can lead the way
yep.
with other musicians as somebody who can construct
songs. And now,
songs, you know?
Now, like some of the best shit ever, you know, he put out like in the last 10 years, you know.
Some
like
great
the,
stuff.
The record with, what was it, Alison Krauss, man,
yeah.
that thing is great.
Yeah.
And then the thing he's doing
the
right
Mighty
now.
The Mighty Rearranger was a really
yeah.
good album.
Yeah, yeah.
Now in Zen in the early 90s, late 80s, I thought was really cool, a really
yeah.
good record. I'd Ship of Fools on there and it had
oh that's a great record.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Heaven Knows.
Yep.
I follow him and I listen to all everything that guy puts out. I'll get it.
I like his new band.
He's a journeyman, you know, like
yeah.
that guy will never stop.
Nope.
No, he will just keep
yeah because Page basically stopped, you know. It's
yeah
funny.
Well,
like he does not play at all. He did the Black Crowes thing for a little bit.
Yep.
He did The Firm, you know, early on. I saw The Firm. It was epic, man.
Yeah.
I mean, The Firm still blows my mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, he hasn't really done anything other than those two things with Robert Plant walking in Clarksdale.
Yep.
And then the Middle Eastern acoustic.
The No Quarter.
No Quarter thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, Robert Plant has just made records, like, non-stop.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think, like, if I could compare, say, a guitar god like Jimmy Page to, say, Pete Townsend, right?
Right.
Who's also a songwriter in his own right. Pete had the ability, the one saving grace Pete has or had in terms of longevity is he got on a microphone.
Yep.
And he sang songs.
Oh, yeah.
And he sang duets with the real voice in Pete's mind, which was Roger. He sang songs with Roger in mind, like I assume Jimmy did with Robert in mind.
Yep.
But he doesn't sing. And so he needs that partnership.
Yeah.
And, you know, he tried with other singers, obviously, but
of
I just
course.
Think Led Zeppelin was his baby. Led Zeppelin was his brainchild.
I get it.
And without that voice, everyone else is an imposter. Everyone else is an impersonator.
Yeah, it's like your first great girlfriend. It takes a long time. Are you ever going to get over that?
Are you ever going to get over that? And,
yeah.
and you wrote some of the greatest riffs ever.
Ever.
You want to play those. You
yeah.
don't want to write new stuff with some young hotshot singer.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so dumb.
I mean, come on, man. You want to be with your old mate, with
Robert. I heard there was rumors that Cornell was kicking around with him.
Yeah.
And after seeing Achilles Last Stand, I really think that if Page and him did something, I'd be all over that.
I would too, because especially knowing the kind of writer Cornell is.
Yeah.
He would really lend himself well to Jimmy's voicings and Jimmy's way of songwriting.
Yeah, like Hands All Over.
Yeah.
It's like a Zeppelin song. The way that is, it's just like, Hands All Over. it's like, and you it's know, one, it's like one, Black Dog.
And it's one chord. Like, it's like a whole lot of love in a sense. It's just sort of hanging out on the open D or whatever they've got it tuned to. It's really, there's no bridge.
Amazing,
there's no
right?
pre-chorus. It's just.
Yeah.
It's so great,
right?
Yeah, it just goes on and on, you know?
God damn.
But he's soaring vocally.
Wow.
Soaring, man.
Yeah, because I saw him for a while and he was a little burnt.
Yeah.
He wasn't hitting as high.
Yeah.
And people were going, man, he's amazing. And I was like, no, he's a little under the note. You know, I think he got a little tired and maybe.
Well, dude, I challenge anyone to go out there with that catalog and sing that material night after night. You're singing yourself into a corner.
Yeah, you are.
You know?
And yeah, yeah.
I saw them in, I saw them twice. And I saw them, the first time I saw them was in Fitchburg, Massachusetts at a Civic Center.
Yeah.
And they killed it. And
Which tour?
Bad Motor Finger.
Yeah, oh God, he crushed on that tour, man.
And then I saw them during the Down on the Upside or Super Unknown? I forget. It's kind of a blur. But this is when he went, you know, short hair and the guitar and the mustache, right? That was the look at that time. And I think he was also dealing with some demons.
Yeah, right.
He, you know.
Exactly.
So I think that may have affected his voice. And if he was used to going on stage in one condition and suddenly was, you know, had to go out on stage in another condition, so a sober person, it can affect all kinds of things for you, man.
Yeah,
you know,
confidence. I
mean, confidence really. and your energy and your gusto.
Yeah.
And a lot of it for performers, you know, musicians. I mean, a lot of the reason why, you know, we check out a little bit before going on stage is because it kind of opens us up. It takes us out of our minds. You know, we're just sort of.
Well, it's such an unnatural thing, stepping in front of like 10,000 people and just blazing out your soul there.
And laying
it all out there with honesty and
stuff. No protection.
None.
You know.
No.
So it's like taking the edge off a little bit. But there's a huge difference between just taking the edge off a little bit and going out there fully loaded.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that's what I always attributed it to with him in that at that time in the late 90s, you know, was
I really couldn't believe how fucking smoking he sounded.
But dude, he's come back. I think that guy's come back full circle.
Unbelievable.
I think he sings now better than ever.
It's crazy.
Because I don't care if a singer can sing, you know, these dog notes. I don't care.
I don't care about that either.
He sings now with more soul.
Yeah. That Achilles Last Stand.
It
when he comes
so
on to the first verse, you're going like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Look, I got goosebumps now. Look,
Hold on.
Because I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, when I saw it in the set list, I immediately went to YouTube, you know, on the first night, the Philly, and I was just fucking floored.
I didn't look at the set list on purpose.
Someone said it to me, and I was like, holy shit, man. You know, I got to say, War Pigs was unbelievable.
It was awesome.
The
fact that they went and they paid tribute to a band that was clearly, even though they didn't admit it back then, that was clearly an influence.
There was no way they weren't into Sabbath.
No, but
when you hear Gun, that is Sabbath. It's like, gung, 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 you know, idea.
A genius song as it picks up tempo.
Yeah,
who
right?
does that?
Yeah.
Who has done that since?
Oh,
starting off slow and sludgy, and you just keep amping it up amping it up till the end of the song, and then off he goes, man.
Incredible.
Great, great tune.
And War Pigs with two guitars.
Yeah.
It sounded so thick.
Massive.
Wow,
When they come in with that downbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
And
dude.
The place went crazy. I don't know about you, but at Madison Square Garden, the place went crazy.
Oh, it was insane.
Yeah.
And
I saw people. It was really something to see, you know, in that particular audience, because I saw people getting emotional, you know. And I think that it's given the generation, what that music meant to that generation. I'd argue that that's probably the last generation, the Generation Xers or whatever you want to say, that 90s, that MTV generation, that's the last one. It was the last one because once you bring technology in, you have now created all kinds of small little pockets of alternative music. There was no place to sort of for it to all funnel into, which was what MTV essentially was, right?
Right.
Because when Temple of the Dog came out, which they re-released, right? Yep. Because it didn't do...
Because the two bands were big.
Yes. Yeah, so
and then they go, hey, we got this old video here with both the guys in it. Let's put it out.
Right. And they're and sitting on a gold mine and they didn't know
it. Platinum the record.
Yes. And they and you when you think about the video, it was totally inconsequential. They're at the beach and it's black and white. No one cared. Yep. So it was what it sounded like. The song, the voices, that's what hit people. MTV, in a lot of ways, was a radio, you know, for that generation.
Absolutely.
No one really cared about the pictures.
I had it on 24-7 in my house.
I did, too.
We
did, too.
It was always on.
Always, always on.
Always.
And unless you were really creative, like with, say, Tool and their videos, you had my attention. Or, like, maybe Metallica with their Unforgiven. You had my attention. But otherwise... It was on in the background because I just wanted to hear what was going on.
Totally.
And I learned a lot about music through that. I mean, I got a lot of rap and a lot of the hip-hop because of MTV.
I loved all that.
And the marriage of these things, like Public Enemy, gave birth to Rage Against the Machine because of these this huge melting pot of music at the time. And I think that the crowd that was attracted to seeing Temple of the Dog...
Yeah.
It's that generation where music still really meant something to a community... of people to
you're
a certain
so right.
age group.
People, that's what I felt, was people that were there, they were all a lot of older people. And it was like, man, this, because, you know, you're going from what they call hair metal or whatever. So you go 70s rock, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Then you go hair metal. And then you go into the grunge era, whatever you want, if you need to label them, which is lame.
Yeah.
But if you look at that, it really was the last hurrah of a giant scene.
Absolutely.
Lollapalooza, a whole world of people going out and seeing music. And to me, it seemed like it was going somewhere in a positive direction of this is, we like all kinds of music now.
Yeah.
We go to Lollapalooza or the Horde, and we like, you know, we like some banjos, or we like fucking acid rock, or we like hip hop, you know, like Lollapalooza. You know, you got Ice Cube, and then you got Alice in Chains.
Absolutely.
You know? Then you got Ministry.
Yeah.
And I love that because it didn't box everyone into like, I only like metal.
Yeah.
And the other guy's like, well, I only like hip hop, you know, or whatever. It really was a united thing. And then after that, it just went away again.
Yeah.
You
well,
know?
now you've got your technology predicting what it is that you want to listen to, you know, you got your stations that you're plugged in.
Yeah,
so.
It's like we recommend this.
Yeah,
judging by what you like.
Yeah,
my Apple phone must be all confused because it's like, wait, he listened to Carole King, then he went Jeff Buckley, and now he's on Metallica. How do we fix this guy?
Right.
They're in there like trying to force some shit on me. Like maybe you'll like this. I'm like, nah, man, don't judge me.
You're on a list.
Don't
somewhere.
Don't fucking judge. You think just because I like Metallica, I like Pantera, don't judge me.
Yeah, I like Sade too, man.
Yeah, I like Sade, smooth operator.
Oh, great bass lines on all her stuff, man.
My only critique of the show, my only, and it was just a small one because I was just, when they played Reach Down, which is the epic, iconic tune of Temple of the Dog, it was a hair fast.
Was it?
Yeah, for me at our show.
Okay.
So to me, that thing is real laid back. It's like, bow, 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 bow.
Sure.
I had a dream the other night. You know, that thing. You were at the bar at the corner, but it was speed up. So it was like, I had a dream the other night. You were at the bar at the corner. And I was like, oh, it's taking that slippery.
Sludgy. Yeah.
Yeah, that darkness out of it to me. Because I loved how dark it was on the record. It really felt like, as he's writing that, he's imagining Andy at the bar in this, you know, long white leather coat, purple glasses, glitter in your hair, you know. And I just, to me, I really picture it. And it was a little fast, and I was like, you bastards.
Yeah, you're going too fast.
Bring that back, man. Get it slippery, you know.
That
was the only critique of the whole night, man. Other than that.
Well, you know, acceptable.
Up. I get it. Jacked up on energy, man. Everyone plays the shit fast, you know.
It happens.
What a tour.
Two encores, man.
Yeah, two. Now, as
All
I
Night
look,
Thing,
also,
closing it off with All Night Thing.
I think if you look at the covers, I really think it has something to do with Andrew Wood. So if you look at, you know, the quicksand David Bowie, yeah. he loved Andrew loved Bowie. If you look at Achilles Last Stand, Andrew wanted to be a rock star. Mm-hmm. He was the guy in Seattle that wanted to be a rock star. Like if he got big, Cobain would have hated him. Yeah. You know what I mean? But he was
unashamed.
He made no qualms about it. He was like, I want to be a rock star. He wore rock star shit around, which really got me to thinking too. You know, as judgmental as everybody was back then early on, like, oh, look at this guy in spandex and stuff. That was weird to me that somehow he got a pass.
Yeah.
Some people in life get passes, you know, like in comedy or music or anything where they do something. You go, well, wait a minute. I thought everybody's supposed to hate crowd work.
Yeah.
Or I thought everybody's supposed to hate glam dudes. Or I thought everybody's supposed to hate... You know, whatever.
Right. Where's his flannel?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was amazing that Cornell and him bonded so much because Cornell really early on is punk rock with like the Flop EP and all that early Soundgarden. Yeah, yeah. It's like punk rock and
Ultra
and,
Mega OK.
Ultra Mega OK. I mean, this stuff is punk rock and Seattle's punk rock. Yeah. It's all that early stuff. Melvins and all Melvins, that stuff.
Yeah.
And
Tad.
Sub Pop. Tad, you know, like to me, I really would love to ask Chris how he got the pass of like, it's cool. You know?
Yeah. You can wear glitter in your hair and we're all going to accept you.
Yeah, stuff. Right?
Maybe it has to do with the fact that he was such a superior songwriter. Maybe it has to do with the fact that you cannot, in any genre, in any era, you cannot deny an artist his rightful place on a stage if he truly is an artist and there's no pretense to it other than I want to be this and this is what I am and I'm gonna fulfill this destiny, right? Yep. And I think he had that. Because he really had no shame, and you can hear it in his songs and in his lyrics.
Yeah, Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah, like he embodied this. Yeah. How do you deny that guy his rightful place on a stage? I would think a lot of guys walking around in Seattle that time were probably intimidated.
Yeah.
By his convictions.
Well, with some people with confidence, you're always going to be like, fuck that guy. But really deep inside, you're like, I wish I could wear orange pants and fucking, you know, wear eyeshadow.
Yeah, maybe
and stuff.
I should do
For
that.
Really.
Yeah.
For real. Because that scares the normal person. Yeah. And then they just, like, I know for years when I was just rock and roll, people were like, he's just some fucking rocker. When it wasn't cool to be rock and roll.
Right.
Now it's cool to be rock and roll again, which is hilarious because it's kind of underground again.
Yeah.
But once rock, always rock to me. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? It's just like,
Absolutely.
Hey, it's not like fake. This is who I am.
No.
First time I hear rock, I'm rock for the rest of my fucking life.
Forever.
And you know, me like cocaine, you know?
Yeah, and flannel and goatees, those aren't things that, you know, are fashionable. At least in Massachusetts, they weren't.
Just weren't. Sam,
go there right now. You'll see somebody walking down the street in flannel and a goatee.
That outfit was exactly what I wore every day in San Fran because it was like, it's foggy in the mornings and the afternoons. And then, you know, midday, you tie the flannel around your waist because you're like, you didn't want to carry it, but you had to have it because the weather could change at any minute. Yeah. All of a sudden, fucking shitty out again.
It's not a grunge uniform. It's the working man's uniform.
It was a $5 outfit.
Totally,
you know what I mean?
Man.
It was like, I got Doc Martens because they lasted fucking 5 years.
No.
And you're always walking in the city or riding a motorcycle. And then I got a flannel. And it's funny because I never, until recently, I wear flannels every day of my life or a leather jacket. I always hated flannels because they were wool and they made me itch. Now the new ones from Japan are cotton and they're beautiful like that one. Feel that thing, man. It's like a jacket.
It is like a jacket.
Yeah. So I always wore them to stay warm, but I was always, my neck was itching. I felt like some kid with like rashes. Mom, my neck is itching, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny, man. And that obviously, you know, it was weird to think back of that, like going to like Macy's and they'd have the grunge section.
Remember that?
Of clothing.
It freaked me out.
Yeah, grunge. Hey. Get your summer, your your school clothes, the grunge
line. Oh yeah, man, the Kmart catalog in the newspaper had the the dude on the, you know, the dude and the girl in their flannel
combat boots, you know. Hilarious.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
But you know what, the music of that time, the music just spoke volumes to me, and I think it still holds up.
It still holds up.
Seeing that concert, hearing those songs live, like floating, you know, through the garden, man, was just like, wow, this is really cool. And I hope that they do it again.
I do too.
I hope that they say, well, you know what, these songs, these are great, but maybe there's some riffs in there, and maybe we make another album. Who knows?
I believe in that.
I think that would be really, really cool.
I think that it's one of the best concerts I've seen in 20 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It really knocked me out, man.
And it was so like minimal, like the staging,
right?
Everything, yeah.
Oh.
It was like those jellyfish, whatever they were in the back that lit up.
When they first come on, it looks like it reminded me of the Clash London Calling video. And I was wondering if anybody's picking up on that. It just looked like a dock with these white lights on, like the yellowish hue.
Absolutely.
And I was like, oh, this is the London Calling video right here. Like they're just down on a dock, like blue collar dudes working it out. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And minimal amps, couple half stacks.
Yep.
And the bass player, Jeff, is just underrated, man. Like, I mean, that guy did all the art back then.
Yep.
And I watched, or I read an interview with him recently, and he was saying, which I didn't even know, but he didn't enjoy the Mother Love Bone era when he was in the band. And when they were doing Pearl Jam, he wasn't even going to join in for a minute because he didn't like how he was treated by Stone and the guys.
Really?
I guess because he was just looked at as like the bass player buffoon, you know?
Yeah.
And meanwhile, he's doing all the art and everything.
Yeah.
And he was like really adamant about, look, if we do another band, I've got to have like my voice and I got to be able to have a say, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it was
I didn't know that because I always look at him as sort of the unspoken,
the
silent partner that's, a Pearl Jam.
Well, when you look at the, I'll show you this real quick, and you tell me how you think. It's incredible. When you look at an early photo of, by the way, everybody, the Mother Love Bone box set just came out, and you can get it on Pearl Jam's website. It is fucking next level, what they went through to do. They put together, they remixed the record, and then you get these promo photos. Look at that. Now look at Jeff. He is the definition of fucking Seattle right there. I love his look.
Oh yeah.
You know, with the shorts, with the thermals underneath, with some like crusty high tops.
Oh yeah, with the bandana with the hat over it.
Yeah, I remember. It's like,
oh yeah.
But Mother Love Bone, they put this deluxe box out, and you get two of their 8x10s. They reprinted a Seattle mag, The Rocket, like a paper fanzine thing with an interview with Andrew Wood.
Yep.
And then you get a huge poster and you get a stencil like to paint shit, you know, like spray paint around. But this is really amazing, man. Like,
the stencil was part of their whole shtick back then.
That was it, man.
Yeah,
they just painted all around, you know?
Yeah, man.
Unbelievable.
Old school.
Well, fuck, man. I'm so glad that you saw it and we could talk about it, you know?
Yeah, me too, man. It was definitely a concert. For me, it was definitely the concert of, more so than just the concert of the year for me, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that was probably the coolest concert I have seen in a long time, man. A long time. And, dude, wait, we did not mention something here.
Yeah, which Fascination Street?
No.
Yeah.
River of Deceit.
Oh!
Man.
Oh, yeah, we're so fucking dumb. We almost missed that.
River of Deceit.
It was amazing because some guy, when they first put the first set list up, goes, wow, man, I wonder if they'll ever do any Mad Season songs. And I was like, no, why would they do that? You know, it's not about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next night they do River of Deceit. And holy shit, man.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Hair's sticking
now. More goosebumps.
Yeah, man.
Because when you look at the music that these guys have created, you got Temple of the Dog, you got Mad Season, you got Pearl Jam, you got Soundgarden, you got Mother Love Bone, you got Green River. The side bands Yeah. Those records, they're not just a couple tunes and some filler garbage. Those two side records of Temple of the Dog and Mad Season are mind-boggling.
Absolutely. That Above record, man, when that came out, when they dropped that, I was hooked
Man
on
Again
that.
and Lane Together.
Yeah. And Barrett Martin on drums.
Unbelievable, right?
Oh, man. Killing it. Yeah.
That record is incredible.
It really, really is, man. And that's definitely, that's Lane, you know, at some of his finest moments, yeah. I think, on record were that, on that album, because there were subtleties musically that I don't think, I mean, as much as I love Alice, you know, there were some kind of subtleties that Alice in Chains couldn't go to that he was able to contribute there. And man,
well, it was
poured
a bluesy
his heart out.
Feel.
Very much
I love,
so.
And when you read the lyrics, you know, like, my pain is self-chosen.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable the honesty on those lyrics. Artificial Red.
Yeah.
You know, that thing is...
Don't know anything.
I know, right? Yeah. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
And for them to play that, to me, it's a lot like the 60s in San Fran, where that was really a community, man.
Absolutely.
And they're out there celebrating where they came from,
who
they are, and how much great fucking music comes out of
and
that.
Lending to one another's art and their musical visions, not hindering, hampering, or taking away, or you know, taking the piss out of their bands. It was a healthy form of competition.
It really was. It really was, man. They said that, you know? They said that, and it's amazing that we got that music, and I'm so fired up. And I stood up the whole show.
People
were sitting down and stuff. I was like standing up, even on the ballads and everything.
Yeah.
There was no piss tracks.
Yeah.
I couldn't go piss.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, this is insane.
My only gripe with the show that I was at, and it wasn't because of the band, it was that, you know, the party I was with, there was this one of those VIP boxes,
you know? Yeah.
Okay, so where we were in the crowd was fantastic, and the sound was perfect. I mean, it was just, like you said, it was like the CD. And I was amongst all of the concert goers, and, you know, there was emotion, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, man, we should go up to this VIP box because we were invited, and it's the right thing to do.
That takes you out of it.
It was fine, but whatever, but sonically.
It
blew
comparatively. When the crowd was singing Hunger Strike, when he goes, and he's not here, so you guys are going to sing the part.
Killer.
It was magic, man.
Oh, man.
It was magic. Yeah. The arena lit up,
it
you know?
It really did.
Times of Trouble.
Yeah.
Really hurt me.
Yeah.
You know? And then they closed with All Night Thing.
All Night Thing.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, they came back out for that one more. And I thought to myself, I'm like, wow, they didn't do All Night Thing. And then they came out one more time.
Yeah.
And finished off the album.
Super encore.
Yeah.
Super encore, man. Fascination Street by The Cure.
By The Cure. Yeah, yeah. Giving it to you, man.
Which is another thing I think nod to Andrew Wood, you know, because he was like, look at fucking The Cure, what they represent, you know, heavy makeup and glammy and dark and you know that.
Yeah, but ultimately songwriting. The songs
so
are there.
Right. You're so
you
wrong.
Cannot deny him as a songwriter. Man, that guy's a tunesmith.
Wow, dude.
He really is.
Really.
I think that's what all songwriters have in common is you don't care, you know, once you peel back all of the icing that's on top of you know, trying to sell your product, when you get down to the songs, you don't really care what they sing, they sound like sonically, or how they sing, or any of that. It's what is conveyed and how genius is the melody to the lyric to the chord progression.
Yeah.
And that comes in all shapes, sizes, colors, and it's a beautiful thing when you get into the, you know, to the song craft. You realize, wow. You know, this is a lifelong pursuit.
I mean, Chloe, you know, Crown of Thorns, just alone, like that's like the ultimate.
Epic. That's an epic
ultimate
tune.
Ballad. You're like, wow, I wish I wrote that. You know,
And Pearl, to hear Eddie Vedder do that, because I watched it on YouTube. Him, they did that.
He kills it. He kills it
again. Goosebumps.
Yeah, he kills it.
He dude.
He does, man.
His voice, the way that he delivers it, it's perfect. And
the only thing missing was some Elton John. You know, like an Elton John cover would have been fucking, because, you know, he was way into Elton John.
That would have been.
If they would have done like
Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Oh,
could you imagine?
That's so dark.
Oh, could you imagine? And the cold crowd singing the refrain.
Yeah.
Forget it. We got to tell Cornell.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Cornell, if you're listening, add it, bro.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan of this podcast.
Well, you've had some heavy hitters on recently, dude. You had Cantrell.
Yeah.
And then Rich Robinson.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah,
you've had some big cats.
Talk about songwriters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cantrell.
Serious tunesmiths, man.
And Rich Robinson. Those guys. These guys are all underrated songwriters because they're not from the era of where, you know, they're not from that era of like, you know, Townsend and the Stones and all that. But these guys are the same level of songwriting.
Absolutely.
Multiple records with massive deep cuts.
Absolutely.
You know?
And given their age, that takes a lot of work and a lot of sweat. You got to devote 24 hours a day to that kind of craft. You know?
And some of that stuff's so intricate. Like when I was young playing music.
Yeah.
I didn't have the skills that, like, I hear Andrew Woods, like, how I'm like, wow, man, this guy's got some serious music skills
because
we can't even cover this song.
From piano vocal, man.
So, I mean, Stardog Champion, you know, it's like, you know, like, oh, man, this is complicated. You know what I mean?
But it doesn't sound like it such when you put sound. It on the record
but
player.
But it's like Zeppelin, you know? It just comes on. And like, Zeppelin is so hard to play.
It is. It's deceiving.
Know? Yeah.
It
Achilles'
really
Last Stand.
Forget about it.
I remember when we were doing the Bonzo Bash?
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do Achilles' Last Stand. And then I kind of you know, brought that back because I was like, it's so many verses, so many lyrics, and I still don't know all the lyrics to it, and I never will unless I had a teleprompter or something, because it's like, holy shit, that thing's a saga.
It is. I had to sing that one, I don't know, a few Bonzo Bashes, you know, with a few different band configurations, oh man, I had my cheat sheets on the ground.
Yeah.
And that was a song, because lyrically, you're right, there are many verses.
Many.
And I had to rely upon my grammar school poetry memorization skills, where it was like, you know, memorize this Robert Frost poem and come in and recite it.
Right.
It was like, I had it taped to my wall, the lyrics, and I was like, I'd wake up and I'd be like, okay, it was an April morning, that's the first line. Take it and, you know, build the imagery in your mind.
Right.
And get you through it. But not only do you have to remember the words, you got to remember, okay, this verse, this is a double verse. This is not. This is the other riff. That's you know, that whole thing. And there's a lot of parts. What a great tune. I want to jam it right now.
Right? Me too, man. I just love how it comes in. The setup of the vocal, you know.
Sang it in a wheelchair, man.
I know.
He sang it in a wheelchair.
Yeah, broke foot, man. Car crash.
Yeah.
Out in Malibu, you know, like I guess in Malibu, like it's where they wrote
Dark
that
Days for Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, really.
Big time. And the art and the I think the album expresses that. I think, man.
I think that record is so underrated.
Me
to me
too.
It's Zeppelin 3 and then Presence, you know.
Yeah.
T for One.
Yeah.
Oh, T for One.
Yeah, man. Epic tune.
Oh, so great. Yeah. Well, shit, great to see you.
And what
are you doing? Are you is Whitesnake's off the road?
Whitesnake is off the road for the year.
I realize with Whitesnake and Bullet Boys, I can't ever say it without going, in the still of the night. And when I see Bullet Boys, I'm like, smooth up in ya. You know what I mean? It's so iconic, you know?
It is very, very iconic,
What are you guys doing?
Well, we've wrapped up, basically, I mean, we've been on the road, you know what, 2 years. You know, we did the Purple album. And then we went out and toured that. And then right on the heels of that, we went out and did a hits tour.
Right.
You know, and...
And just off now?
Yeah, and that wrapped up. What was that? September, October, somewhere in there. Yep. And I've been out doing weekend gigs with the Guess Who.
Oh, no shit?
Yeah, doing fly dates with the Guess Who. Yeah.
Now, who's in the band?
No Time. And we've got Derek Sharp. He's the singer. He's the singer-songwriter extraordinaire. And then we've got Will Ivankovich, who is a guitar player, also producer.
And, right. Original dudes?
No.
No.
No, no, no. The only original dude, and then Leonard Shaw, who's been in the band since, like, I don't know, 90 or something.
Who are the original guys?
Gary Peterson is the drummer. He's the last original member.
Are the other guys dead?
No, no. In fact, there's the bass player who I am I wouldn't say replacing, but you know, probably filling in for.
Right.
He decided that he just, his name's Jim, Jim Cale. He didn't want to do, I think the road just got to him at his age.
Yeah,
given
yeah.
his age. They've been out on the road forever.
Yeah, this guy's got to be like 90 now, right?
Yeah, man, they're getting up there, you know?
Yeah.
So it takes its toll.
Yeah, it
does. So he put down the bass, and then because I had a little break on the Whitesnake tour, Derek hit me up. He's married to Sash Jordan, and
oh,
Sash
wow.
and I have a
oh,
history
yeah.
with the
oh,
band's
that's right.
son.
I forgot about that. Yeah. yeah. I love her. Hey, Sash, how are you?
Yeah, I love you, Sass.
Yeah, she did the show. It's great.
She did. She's awesome.
Yeah.
But she, you know, so he hit me up and said, hey, you know any bass players that can do these dates? And I said, I happen to be off.
Yeah.
Let me give it a crack because those are some great bass lines.
What are the hits again?
You've got No Time.
Oh, yeah. No Time Left for You.
Yep. You've
great
got
one.
American Woman.
Of course, yeah. I mean,
you've,
yeah.
You've got Share the Land.
Share the Land? How's yeah. that go?
Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand.
Oh, I love that
there
song.
Share the Land.
Oh, that's a great one.
You've got These Eyes.
Oh,
big,
my God.
Big
These
tune.
Eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, my
big
God.
Tune.
That tune is yeah. killer.
Yeah. You've got oh. a song called... it's it's New Mother Nature with oh my God, I'm blanking because all I can keep all I'm hearing right now is it's the New Mother Nature taking over.
Yeah.
In the soul. In the morning,
that's some weed working in there for you.
No Sugar Tonight.
Oh, No Sugar Tonight.
Yeah.
That's my theme song
now.
Yeah,
No Sugar Tonight.
That's
that is your theme
yeah.
song.
No Sugar Tonight.
Yes, that's
oh,
it.
Oh, wow. They
yeah.
got some fucking hit. Are they in the yeah. Hall of Fame?
They're Canadian.
Oh, they got to be. Oh,
yeah,
they're Canadian.
They're Canadian. So
well,
I don't know
you
if
can
they're...
still be in the Hall of
well,
Fame.
Well, yeah, because Rush.
Yeah, Zeppelin, all those guys are in there.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter.
No, not at all. It's
well,
Rock and Roll
yeah,
Hall of Fame.
They should be in the Rock
and
Roll
Hall. Are you kidding me, man? That's five.
They should be.
Five serious hits.
Yep.
These Eyes is crushing, man. That sounds like Tom Jones, right?
Yeah.
These Eyes.
Yeah. Now, Burton Cummings, who is the original singer, he's
right.
still alive and well, and he's out doing, I think... his version, and he doesn't call it the Guess Who, but he, you know, he's doing
right.
a Burton Cummings show or what have you. And then you've got the guitar player, Randy Bachman.
Oh, yeah. BTO?
Bachman sure.
Badass.
BTO. So Bachman.
God,
and,
that's a super group, man.
Yeah. It was a big band, man.
Wow. What a great band. You know, it's like, I know Guess Who, and I know, of course, American Woman, but then I forget that all those other tunes were them, you know?
Oh,
and
yeah.
those are all staples on, like, 70s greatest hits. The K-Tel presents the Guess Who,
absolutely.
You know? No Sugar Tonight.
Absolutely.
You know?
They had a big single called Laughing.
God, man.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What are you guys doing, like, casinos and stuff?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. We just fly in and fly out. And
then you're going home for the holidays?
Going home for the holidays, yeah. It's going to be a little crazy. I'm going into the studio.
Working on your solo record?
Yeah. I got a couple new songs in the oven. And after listening to, you know, the album in its entirety, there's just some production issues that I want to fix. I don't want to put anything out that I'm not 100% entirely
of
proud of, and you know what I mean?
You got nothing but time anyway.
Right, that's the thing. So I just want to get in there and knock out some things that have been bothering me. And then and I got a couple new ones in. My buddy Warren Riker, who produces and Grammy Award winning Warren Riker.
The guy in Jersey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going down to Hoboken, and we're going to hit it again. And right after, basically right after Thanksgiving, and I'm going in for a week. I'm bringing my friend Jay Bird, who Monzart, who plays on a lot of the original stuff that I'm doing. He's an old school friend from back home. You know, we were in bands together in high school. You know, he's
badass.
He's my mate. You know,
yeah,
so
he's
coming in, and then after that, I'll go back to L.A., we'll do Christmas, and then I get back on a plane, come back to this side of the country, and do the annual New Year's Eve gig I do in my hometown.
Oh, no shit, huh?
Yeah, man. I do.
What do you do for that? Like, you just have your own band, you do it?
Yeah, I use all, it's all
local guys?
High school friends, man.
Yeah. Yeah,
who
maybe,
all still
maybe
play.
Maybe they'll do a Love Bone song.
Maybe.
Wow.
I'm not going to talk about it, but yeah we change it up every year. We,
yeah, yeah.
You know. And because it gets stale, you know, you don't want to just keep churning it out. It's not
like be like Fish, man. They pick a record every year. You know?
That would be. I'd love to
Dark Side of the Moon and fucking the band, Big Pink, all that.
That would be a great. It'd be a great thing to do. And if and when you know, I have like a vehicle that's playing originals, you know, largely, then I'll go down that road because it's so cool.
I know, I love it.
But now we're just trying to touch upon all kinds of things. You know, we do Prince, we do funk. We'll just try and touch upon all
that's
kinds
great.
Of stuff. And it's a home. It's for my hometown. You know what I mean? It's Leominster, Massachusetts. There's you know, very little in terms of, you know, entertainment in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
That goes on there. I mean, even though it's always, to me, I've always said this about my hometown. It's a hotbed for talent. It's always been a great talent pool there. And it's cool that the guys that I grew up with are still playing and still good at it.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
Holy shit, David Coverdale just came in here.
Well, Michael, I want to wish everyone a happy holiday and happy Turkey Day, love and light. No postmortems.
He's going to kill me one day if he hears this. He's going to fucking hang me.
My favorite story.
Michael, you know you're fired, and I'm going to tell you why.
And he's going to press play on his iPod. It's going to play this back. You do understand why you're fired.
My favorite story still is when he says, I understand you do a great version of me.
Yeah, and my version sucks when I get, I'm like, it turns into, instead of this, you know, love and light, it turns into love and light. You know, I can't get into the. I don't want to be too good at it.
Yeah.
I don't want to freak him out.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
So great.
I don't want to do it. It reminds me of the movie, you know, because I think about the movie Escape from Alcatraz, where the guy is painting the warden.
Oh, yeah.
And he sees
and he
the painting, and it's like.
And it's got that smirk.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he ends up cutting his fucking fingers off
because
he takes all of his art supplies away.
Oh, it's so brutal. Brutal, right?
I think about like you're fired.
Yeah,
you know,
and then you just cut your fingers off and don't play bass anymore.
But yeah, we're talking about a new record. We're talking about getting in there, you know, next year and laying down some cuts because the lineup. David's in love with the lineup right now.
Oh, that's great.
You know what I mean?
That's great.
We got a really good band happening, you know, and everybody gets along real well and plays together well. So, yeah.
Well, great to have you on, man.
Dude, thanks. It's always great to be on, man.
Yeah.
When we get back to LA, we'll do another one. We'll talk about the state of the world because we haven't even touched upon that.
Yeah. I don't want to bum people out.
I don't either. I don't want to talk about it.
I want to celebrate beauty right
Me
now.
Me too, and music and the joy of it. And go out and watch more concerts. Go out and listen to more music, people.
Yeah, and see get some out comedy there. Too,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, see some
You're
comedy,
need to
man.
See comedy.
Absolutely. Get out of your homes. Get off of your little PDAs and all your little contraptions and get out into the real world, flesh and blood.
Let's go next door here and get some shawarma next to the Comedy Cellar.
I'm down.
Okay.
I'm down. Let's do it, brother.
You go there? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's good stuff
Let's
over
go.
There.
All right.
Let's
Thanks, guys,
it.
For tuning in.
Peace
See you
and
later.
Love, people. Peace and love.
And come see me in New York all this week at The Stand. Don't sleep, East Coast. See ya. Keep partying. Leave a review and subscribe to this podcast. Candles lit.